In that ancient fortress dwelt something ancient and eternal, something beyond the comprehension of mortal kind. And he could feel the heat of its fury from here, melting his skin, which ran from his bones in seeping torrents. That unconscionable horror had come for him and him alone. So badly had he failed. He felt a terror such as he had never known, almost agonizing in its intensity. "No!" he screamed. "Not that! Anything but that!" He tore at his face, yanking the cool metal mask loose. Suddenly, he was staring into the misshapen faces of the hulking avian beast. Its eyes widened in shock. He felt the writhing beneath his bones, and the cracking and popping as his true face emerged. He started to laugh, great choking gasps of laughter, in a voice that was not his own. He pressed his head against the creature's, and he felt the thing beneath his skin reach forth and wrap its barbed tendrils around the beast's twin skulls. It loosened its grip on his neck and desperately scratched at his skin, hammering at his ribs, but to no avail. He could hear the tearing of flesh, and hot blood poured into his mouth. He chortled wetly as he bore the creature to the ground. Tendrils dug deep into its brain, sucking greedily. The creature kicked and struggled, but eventually it lay still. He rolled free, slipping in a pool of spreading gore. He noticed with interest that his broken arm supported his weight with no pain. In fact, he felt no pain at all. He glanced at the mangled corpse of his enemy. There was nothing but crushed bone and meat where its two heads used to be. Around him was silence. He rose to his knees and stared around the circle at the watching Zangors, smiling broadly, showing them the truth of what he was, what he had become.
"The conduit," hissed the shaman. "Blessed of the change maker."
"Blessed," said Vamaya disbelievingly. "Blessed?"
"We follow the conduit," said the creature, bowing before him.
Its brethren followed suit as one. Vamaya's body shook. He could not keep it in. He burst into racking laughter, clutching his belly and sprawling onto the floor, roaring so hard that it hurt. He could not breathe. It was too perfect. Chapter 15. The singing isles were well named. Even from a distance, Callis could hear a mournful, lilting sound, drifting over the crashing of the waves and the roar of the wind. As the thrice lucky drew closer, he could see purplish rolling beaches and twisting coils of bleached coral. There were dozens of these rocky outcroppings protruding from the waves, some barely larger than a house, others far larger, and dotted with clusters of swaying trees. The water here was so clear they could see right down to the seabed, a carpet of shimmering colors and darting fish.
"What's making that sound?" he asked.
"The trees," said Chev, pointing to the nearest cluster. The trunks were all encrusted with a glittering substance, which cast a prismatic glimmer across the water. The leaves were similarly iridescent, and chimed gently as the breeze sent them tumbling against one another. Now that Callis looked, that pearly, glimmering dust was everywhere. Trails of it ran across the ocean floor beneath them, and the beaches they passed were not made of grains of sand, but of multicolored motes of the same substance. The thrice lucky drifted gently through this strange landscape, the corsairs running a line of chain over the side to measure the distance to the bottom, making sure they did not stray into the shallows and find themselves stranded. There was a stillness in the air that sat uneasily with Callis. After months on the trail, he was used to shrieking jungles and treacherous seas, to being always on edge. This place was so still, it felt unnatural to him,
a mirage of peace in a wilderness of rage and motion. I don't like this place, he said. It's too calm. Something doesn't feel right.
Captain Zenthi says this is as safe a haven as you'll find on the Talon coast, said Chev. Something here keeps the beasts of the sea at bay, she says.
Does she now? Said Callis. You're developing quite the rapport with our noble captain.
Right now, I'm short of allies, Chev replied, shrugging. I'll take those I can find.
Erika Zenthi is no one's ally but her own, said Callis. Trust me, if she values you, it's because she thinks you could be useful to her. Just watch yourself. This woman rules the waters within 100 leagues of Excelsis, and you don't climb that high without leaving a mountain of bodies beneath you.
I've heard the stories.
And I've seen her work, said Callis sharply. I'm just saying, watch yourself.
The elf smirked and leaned out over the rail, letting the wind rush through her outstretched fingers. They were sailing into a wide semicircular atoll, hidden from sight by a wall of dead coral that wound along the island ahead like a ridged backbone. A long strip of beach reached out into the bay, and beyond that was a tangle of woodland, filled by yet more of those strange crystal-lined trees.
Sigmar's teeth, I can't wait to set foot on dry land, sighed Callis. Doubtless there would be all manner of blood-sucking beasts hiding in the vegetation, just waiting to sink their teeth into him as soon as he hopped ashore, but right now he hardly cared.
They anchored a few dozen paces from the beach and lowered one of the shore boats into the water. Callis immediately clambered in, much to the grumbling annoyance of the corsairs. He checked his pistol to make sure it was primed and took a bench next to the first mate, Oscus. The elf eyed him blankly, but didn't speak. There were 9 other elves in the boat, all armed. They would be the scouting party. There was a great splash, and a spray of water cascaded over them. Chev Arklis emerged from the water, spitting and grinning.
Oh, gods, that's the first time I felt clean for weeks, she laughed, and flicked a handful of water at Callis, striking him in the face.
He snorted with laughter and jabbed out with the tip of an oar, pushing her under.
Enough, grunted Oscus.
The elves began to row them in, and Chev swam alongside on her back, kicking her long legs in exaggerated arcs. Her hair swirled around her scarred face in an auburn halo. She flashed him a wide grin. Callis realized he was staring and looked away. The beach drew nearer, and they hopped over the side, weapons drawn, splashing through the shallows and onto dry ground. It was quiet. The undergrowth barely stirred. A few long-plumed avian creatures trilled from the tops of the gleaming trees. A faint, pungent smell met Callis's nostrils, like rotting meat. Chev emerged from the water, shaking her hair dry, leaving gleaming footprints as she strode up the beach towards them.
We are alone, said Oscus, waving to the thrice lucky.
More boats were lowered in the water, and several elves began to dive into the water to examine the wolf ship's many abrasions. From the shore, Callis could get a better look at the damage. She had held up surprisingly well against the gyre shark's battering strikes, but had not escaped unharmed. There was a gaping hole that ran across a section of the middle deck, and the ship was listing badly, which suggested a breach on the lower hull.
It'll take a good few hours to get her sea ready, said Oscus grimly. I do not like being out here, exposed. Reavers hunt these waters, and worse things will come drifting out from the abyss come nightfall.
Toll followed Zenthi down into the depths of the Thrice Lucky. They could hear the moans and shrieks of injured crew echoing from the gunnery deck. Toll had seen the wounded, and had no illusions about the likelihood of many survivors. The barbs that the gyre shark had expelled were lined with small, coarse growths, like thorns, that snapped away when you tried to pull them free, scattering into flesh. If that happened, it was as good as a death sentence, he knew. They would quickly turn septic and poisonous like a bullet fragment, and you'd slip into an agonizing fever, and eventually blissful oblivion. Another piercing scream cut through the gloom. His own scars ached in sympathy.
The cross-shaped wound on his back, where a bullet had ricocheted deep, and his old friend Khazrag had set to work digging it out with a fire-heated blade while he writhed and screamed. The great gouge on his thigh, where he'd been forced to perform the same operation with trembling fingers, removing the splintered fragments of an arrowhead, while ravenous hounds howled in the distance, coming closer with every moment. He banished the unpleasant memories. They descended into the lowest deck, the bilge. It reeked. Even Toll, who had been around death, disease, and war for all of his adult life, was taken aback by the smell. It was a piquant blend of weak old corpses, filth, and decay, backed by the sickly sweet aroma of rotting fish. Brown-green water lapped around the length of the hull, thigh-deep, dotted with the floating corpses of various vermin. He could see the ridge of the keel running down the far end of the chamber. Thank Sigma, it looked to be undamaged. By the soft glow of lambent sconces that dotted the wall, filled with some kind of luminescent shell-dwelling creatures, Toll could see scores of pale, long-legged arachnids skittering across the ceiling of the chamber. Four elves were wading through the fetid murk, inspecting a large wound in the side of the thrice lucky. Wedges of dark wood had been hammered into the breach, and the makeshift repairs smothered with a stained strip of sail. Yet even now, a torrent of water was spilling through the holes in the blockage. Toll was astonished that they were still afloat.
"It's bad, Captain," said one of the crew, a heavily scarred elf with a shock of white hair wrapped up in a tail on the top of his skull, his face smeared with sweat and grime. "But not fatal. It can be patched with a little effort, but we'll have to sail easy until we reach Bilgeport and make more extensive repairs. She'll handle the journey, but another bad hit, and she could splinter along the length of the hull. If that happens, we're all heading to the deep within moments."
Xenthi let loose an impressive stream of curses that went on for some time.
"Arkia," she said at last, "you're in charge of the repairs. Get it done. We're a day and a half sail from port. We'll make it."
She turned and pushed past Toll, heading back up the stairs. He said nothing. There was little point. He knew Xenthi well enough not to press her when she was in a foul mood, and the joy of the Gyre Shark kill had swiftly worn off. He supposed that the damage was worse than she had thought.
"Don't utter a word, Toll," she said, as if reading his mind. "The catch will more than make up for the damages. I could buy a whole new ship for what we'll make from the liver alone. There's always some damn fool alchemist with more money than sense who's willing to trade a fortune for new ingredients."
"This is your ship," said Toll.
And when she turned to glare at him, he simply shrugged.
"I've no interest in going over the same territory again. Just get me to Bilgeport, and I'll be on my way. Our partnership is over."
"You still owe me," she said, "and I mean to collect what is due."
"I'm a man of my word, Arika. You'll get what you seek when we return to Excelsis."
The tension hung in the air between them for several long moments. Finally, the captain turned and headed up the stairs to the main deck, saying not a word. A chill breeze was beginning to blow by the time the work teams had hacked down a supply of timber for repairs, a refreshing zephyr that was a welcome change after several days of unrelenting heat. The elves had stripped to the waist and fashioned makeshift lifts out of the ballista tracks, winching piles of thick timber to the main deck. Callis watched them work, enjoying the sensation of the sand trickling between his toes, the slight chill of the lapping waves. He closed his eyes and sighed. What he would not give now for a pint of amber mead, a bustling tavern, street cobbles under his feet. He heard the scuffed footsteps of someone approaching and reluctantly climbed to his feet. Oscus appeared, his shirt drenched in sweat, sleeves rolled up to expose well-muscled, tattooed arms.
"We will survey the island," said the first mate, "to make sure we are alone. We don't want to be surprised while Thrice Lucky is vulnerable like this. You're coming with us, Gilda. Fetch your blade and follow me.
Callis was surprised at that. Was it progress, he wondered? Or were they simply planning to stick a knife in him and leave him out there to rot? He nodded and joined Oscus and six other crew members. They had ditched most of their armor and gear and carried machetes to hack away the undergrowth. They stared at him expressionlessly. One spat a mouthful of black phlegm onto the sand. Callis returned the insult with an obscene gesture he had learned from one of the Duardin gunsmiths back when he was in the Cold Guard. That earned a snort of laughter from the others. "I'll come too," said Chev, to his surprise. She was unarmed. Callis offered her his backup pistol, a snub-nosed little two-barrel piece he kept tucked in his belt. But she shook her head.
"Guns are more trouble than they're worth, in my experience. I'll stick with my knife."
"Suit yourself, but stay close."
Sarcasm dripped from Chev's tongue.
"I feel safer already."
They filtered into the tree line, slow and careful. They walked for several minutes, padding through waist-high clumps of purple grass, crunching over scattered shards of coral as quietly as they could manage.
"Your companion and Captain Zenthi have blades at each other's throats again," said Chev as they walked. "That's going to come to a head sooner or later?"
"Zenthi's losing interest in the chase," said Callis. "She never gave a damn for capturing Vermeer. What Toll promised her, beyond coin, I've no idea. But whatever it was, it's not enough to keep her out here forever."
"I always imagined that a witch hunter would rely more on threats and brute force than bribery."
"I've never had dealings with any other agent of the Order," said Callis. "But Toll's not the kind to throw his weight around unless the situation calls for it. He plays a long game. One that involves keeping our mercurial corsair content. Besides, there's few who know the sea lanes better than Zenthi."
"Stop your mouths," hissed Oscus.
The noxious smell was slowly getting worse. Callis had an unpleasant feeling that he knew the source of it. He had been around enough battlefields to know the scent of flesh left to rot in the sun. Eventually, they began to see flickers of blue through the trees, and a few minutes later, they emerged on the far side of the island. Callis cursed softly. Ahead of them was a wide, rough expanse of dead coral, far larger than the beach on the opposite side of the island. It was littered with dead things, mounds of skeletons and enormous spiral shells as tall as the Thrice Lucky. Thin cartilaginous racks of bone piled over thick slabs of rancid hide, a shapeless mass of flesh, long trails of winding tentacles rotting in the sun. There were more familiar corpses too, humanoid, lying shattered and broken, skulls removed. This close, the smell was overpowering. Emerging from amidst this carnage was a crude obelisk of piled stones lashed together with sinew. A single, sickening totem rested at its apex. Callis moved closer. Bile rose in his throat. The totem had been delicately carved from the splayed ribcage of a human. Atop this macabre sculpture sat the victim's skull, mouth open in a silent scream. More skulls were piled high around the obelisk, which was stained a deep brown. The bones had been picked clean by scavengers, but they were still smeared with blood and patches of sticky brown gore.
"Flesh reavers," said Oscus. "Mortal tribes who hunt the seas," he added, noticing Callus's blank expression.
"Are they here? On the island?" asked Chev.
"I do not think so," said Oscus. "They raise these shrines to their sea gods across the Talon coast. They hunt beasts, burn ships, raid the coasts. Then they bring their bounty of flesh to the nearest totem, offer the skulls to their gods. The rest they devour."
"If you knew about these savages, why did you bring us out here?" said Callis.
"We did not think they dwelled within these islands,"
Oscus replied.
"Their home is north, beyond the Sea of Spines. But more of them come with every passing season. As the God King's cities grow and grow, they sense fresh prey."
The elf strode to the totem,
stepping over picked clean carcasses. Several long-tailed crustaceans that had been swarming over the yellowing bones scattered as he passed. He smashed the bone effigy with his blade, knocking it to the floor.
"These kills were recent," he said, disgust clear in his voice. "Perhaps 10 days old, maybe less. They may still be close. We must not linger here."
Chapter 16. Zolek sat alone in the dim light of his war tent, running the whetstone down the edge of his axe. The blade was already sharp enough to split skin at the merest touch, but the repetitive motion soothed him, quieted the throbbing in his skull, and so he continued. The tent parted, and Krom entered. The blood priest had to stoop, so tall and thin was he. His pale skin was smeared blue with dye made from crushed coral, and he had slicked his hair with blood. He carried his own weapon, a long-handled mace with a head fashioned from chipped obsidian.
"It is time," said Krom.
Zolek rose without a word and secured his horned barbuta in place. It sat tightly over his skull, the long cheek guards cold against his skin. He hefted his axe, twirled it in his hands, feeling the reassuring weight and balance. It was a strong weapon, forged by city dwellers from good iron. He had claimed it long ago, on only his third raid. Zolek had killed many people, so many that he remembered few of their faces. But the old soldier whom he had taken this weapon from, he could picture every line of that one's face, the weathered skin, the sad eyes widening in pain and shock as the spear had slipped into his guts.
"The clouds gather," said Krom, "and the seas churn red. Do not fail, my chieftain. Send him worthy souls, for it has been far too long since we honored him, and his anger is rising like the tide."
Together they strode out into the light. Zolek glanced out across the endless expanse of the ocean. The priest was right. Swirls of red trailed through the water, which churned and foamed with gore. A killing frenzy. The beasts of the sea were devouring each other. He could see arcing fins tearing through the chaos, bursts of bloody spray jetting into the air.
"The blood kraken watches," said the priest.
They walked along the jagged shoreline of broken, dead coral. Zolek's men were crouched or slumped across the rocky outcroppings, their eyes fixed on their chieftain. Ahead, the dusty trail emerged in a great wide circle marked out with spears, swords, and axes thrust into the ground. The dead reef formed a wall around the killing circle, and scores of warriors lined its length, bare flesh marked with war paint and old wounds. He could feel their eagerness, their longing to see spilled blood. They would not have to wait long. 3 men waited in the arena. 2 were small, lithe, armed respectively with serrated blades and barbed hooks. They were almost mirror images of one another. Zolek recognized them instantly as the twins, Foreg and Margos. The 3rd was a giant of a man, taller even than Zolek. His skin was as white as the belly of a shark, and his body was a wall of muscle and scarred skin. He clutched a great glaive with a blade the length of his forearm. He smiled as they entered the circle, exposing a row of teeth filed to needle-sharp points. Dried blood stained the man's throat and neck, where fangs had pierced his own flesh.
"We stand beneath the eye of the blood kraken," roared Krom,
raising his hands above his head, brandishing his mace.
"Witness to this offering. Too long has it been since we offered tribute, since we sent an offering of worthy skulls down to his eternal throne beneath the waves. He is angered, my children, greatly so. 8 demon ships have we lost since the last crimson moon. 100 souls taken, and still his wrath is not satisfied.
There was a chorus of jeers from the crowd. Zolek grinned beneath his helm. A burst of harsh laughter escaped his lips, aching his throat, where he had caught a bullet from a Duardin's firepike many years past. He savored the pain, like an old friend, channeled it into anger. All would soon know what it was to challenge Zolek, captain of the Skull Taker. Krom waited, letting the shouting die down. Then he raised a hand.
Only those who prove worthy may claim the skull of a chieftain, he said,
and though he spoke softly, his voice carried far upon the wind.
And so these warriors challenge for the right to lead us. Blood will be spilled today, worthy blood, for each man here has claimed 1,000 skulls and more for the Blood Kraken.
He gestured to the twin warriors.
Foreg and Margos of the Flayed Throat.
There was a roar from the twins' crew, and a hail of javelins and thrown axes crashed to earth. Foreg and Margos neither spoke nor reacted to the shouts and bellowed oaths. Their eyes were on Zolek. He gave them a smile. They were nothing, meat for his axe. It was solely for his other opponent that the chieftain cared.
And Mool, captain of the Xanthakra, shouted Krom.
The response was greater by far than for the twin reavers, as the pale giant stepped forward. Fully half of the gathered crowd howled the name Mool, Mool, Mool. A fight broke out in the highest spires of the dead reef. A blade flashed in the sunlight, and there was an arc of crimson. A dead body toppled bonelessly down the mound of bleached coral, leaving a trail of smeared gore in its wake. Zolek could smell the iron tang of the blood. It soothed the throbbing in his skull. Mool stepped forward, eyes locked on Zolek. He was grinding his teeth, a sound like bones crunching under the weight of an axe. He had ever been an ambitious one. It was said he heard the words of the Blood Kraken in his skull when the red rage was upon him. He was the only warrior here whose tributes to the Blood Kraken rivaled Zolek's own. He was also younger, stronger, taller by far. Mool's glaive was dripping with blood. It had already tasted death this day. He paced back and forth, his face twitching, his eyes bloodshot.
The Blood Kraken must be appeased, said Krom. And so these three warriors are chosen, the greatest among our number. They face Zolek of the Skull Taker.
Many voices rose to support their chieftain, though far fewer than there once would have been, even a few spans past. They had been too long without glory. A debt was due. Zolek stepped forward, not taking his eyes from Mool. As chieftain, it was his right to speak. He stood still as a statue and waited. Then he hefted his axe and pointed it directly at the younger warrior, silently. Words meant nothing in the end. He'd heard every threat and hollow boast. No amount of bold talk had ever saved his foes from a bloody death. Mool laughed, a gurgling, bubbling sound, and began to circle him. That surprised Zolek. He had expected the rage-filled warrior to charge him with everything he had. Foreg and Margos approached, spinning their dual weapons with practiced ease. Margos was small compared to Zolek and Mool, but no less scarred by battle. One ear was little more than a ragged strip of flesh, and a red line carved down his face diagonally, turning his face into a permanent leer. In one hand, he carried a barbed hook with a handle grip that enclosed his fist. He raised the weapon and pointed at Zolek.
"You have failed us, old man," he rasped. "Now it is..."
Foreg's sword hacked into his twin brother's skull. Margos's eyes rolled back in his head, and he fell to his knees.
Foreg wrenched the blade free, and the dead man toppled forward bonelessly and lay still. Their audience brayed with laughter, pleased with this ruthless act. There were no rules in the circle, no bonds of honor or blood. Only one would emerge alive. Foreg's cruel, pinched face was locked in a triumphant smirk. The throbbing in Zolek's head turned his vision crimson as the blood that spurted from the twitching corpse of Margos. He started to laugh, as he always did when the killing joy came upon him. Mool made his move, swiping forward with his glaive, using his formidable reach. Zolek smashed that blade aside contemptuously, following with a wide sweep of his axe that sent the gigantic man stumbling back. He recovered fast, as Zolek reversed the swing, hoping to club his foe's brains out with the iron-wrapped haft of his axe. Mool snapped out a punch that connected with his nose, squashing it flat. He felt blood pouring from the wound and reached his tongue out to taste the sweet metal flavor. Foreg rushed in, hacking and thrusting at Mool. His blade tore a gash down the big man's arm, but it was not deep enough. Mool smashed Foreg in the ribs with the haft of his glaive in return, and when the smaller man crumpled, he lashed out at his throat. Foreg had only just scrambled out of the way, though his foe's glaive carved a crimson arc across his back as he retreated. They were all bloodied now. There was the briefest moment of respite as they circled one another, searching for an opening. Mool ran a long, pink tongue down the side of his blade, savoring the gore that was smeared across it. Zolek had heard the stories. The master of the Xanthacra liked to consume raw flesh, living flesh. Foreg struck at the pale giant's ribs, but Mool was unthinkably fast, catching the blow on the haft of his glaive. The two exchanged a flurry of strikes. Foreg's sword hacked deep into Mool's shoulder, and the smaller warrior bellowed in triumph. Mool didn't even scream. Instead, he caught his opponent's hand in one meaty fist, held it tight. Foreg slashed at the man's side with his blade, but the pale man seemed oblivious. His head snapped forward, and Foreg screamed. Mool ripped a chunk of bloody meat from the man's neck. His following roared in triumph. The giant chewed on the mouthful of gore a moment, then swallowed it whole. Foreg was gurgling on the floor, trying futilely to stem the torrents of blood gushing from his wound. Mool smiled a red smile.
"I will taste your flesh, chieftain," he promised. "You have strong blood in you."
The smell, the scent of blood, was overpowering. The rhythmic drumbeat in Zolek's head was almost deafening, calling him to abandon his wits and surrender to the rising tide, to drown in carnage and gore, even if it was his own. He let himself fall into the crimson current. They rushed at each other, caution abandoned in favor of the white-hot joy of battle. Their blades clashed. Zolek punched out, struck Mool's jaw, and felt teeth shatter. He received a headbutt in return, and his already broken nose crumpled with the sound of grinding cartilage. Mool's arms were wrapped around him, tighter than a kraken's embrace. He gasped for air, spat bloody drool into the pale giant's eyes. Mool's teeth snapped forward, bit into his cheek, and tore a strip of flesh free. He could hear the man's gurgling laughter, high-pitched, almost like that of a child. His vision swam as Mool rained punches into his side. A rib cracked. With all his strength, he dragged his axe free, tore a great gash across Mool's belly. The giant stumbled back a step, and his iron grip relaxed for just a moment. Zolek's body was a bloody ruin, but he felt no pain. He stepped forward and brought his axe down with a scream that tore at his throat. It split Mool's glaive in two at the haft. Shrieking in outrage, Mool raised the jagged spike of the haft in two hands and drove it into Zolek's shoulder. It struck deep and ground on bone. The white-skinned giant slammed punches into his face, great hammer blows that rattled his skull. Again and again his head shook, rattled by the ferocious assault. Somewhere,
he lost his grip on his axe and sank to one knee. Still, Mool continued to pound his heavy fists into Zolek's face. He couldn't see, he couldn't hear, but he could smell the big man's rancid, rotten breath. His hand scrabbled around in the dry earth, and his fingers closed on a hard shard of coral. In a single, swift move, he rose and struck out with a makeshift weapon, trusting to the blood kraken to guide his arm. It struck home with a wet, tearing sound, and there was a choking gasp. Through a bleary storm of blood and black lights, Zolek glimpsed his foe. The shard had pierced through Mool's throat. The giant staggered, eyes rolling back into his head. Zolek fell upon him, bearing him to the floor. He tore the coral shard free and stabbed it down again and again. The spatter of blood that trailed through the air in front of him became the coils of the blood kraken. In each razor-bladed limb, it grasped a single skull, and within its immense form there gazed a single furious eye, a cyclopean orb of blazing yellow fire that seared through his very being. The blood kraken had witnessed his bloody work, and it was content. When the haze began to clear, Zolek realized that he was hacking away at little more than a pulped and shapeless mound of flesh. His hearing returned with a painful ringing sound, and he heard the thunder of the watching warriors. He felt a hand on his shoulder.
"It is done," said Krom, the blood priest.
Zolek staggered to his feet. He was caked in gore from head to toe, but his wounds caused him no pain at all. Rain began to drizzle down, and he raised his head and let it clear the blood from his eyes.
"None can deny that the blood kraken has chosen this man to lead us," Krom screamed. "Now we hunt for flesh and for glory. We churn the seas red with the blood of our enemies, and make tribute of their skulls to the dweller in the deep. We sail!"
The response was deafening. Even dead Mool's crew joined the chorus, bellowing Zolek's name. Through the noise cut another voice, an urgent call.
"A sail! A black sail!"
shouted a warrior perched on the highest strata of the dead reef. Zolek bent to grasp his fallen axe and began to climb, hauling his battered body up the face of the cliff. Making it to the summit, he stared out over the wide expanse of the Singing Isles. The skies overhead were darkening, and the mist of rain made it hard to pick out the silhouette of a ship at first. Then he saw it, drifting out from the bay of a half-moon-shaped island. A sleek three-master, gagger-like black sails and an angular hull that sat low to the water. A ship built for speed on the open ocean. Elven, so he guessed. A gift from the Blood Kraken for their bloody sacrifice.
"To the waves," he bellowed, brandishing his axe high. "Tonight we feast."
Chapter 17.
"Sails on the horizon," came the call.
"Raiders, how many do you see?" shouted Zenthi, rushing to the fore guardrail.
"A dozen sails, half a league distant and closing,"
shouted the lookout, pointing out beyond the curve of the nearest reef wall.
"War galleys! Reaver ships, captain! They've sighted us!"
Toll swore. He was no expert sailor, but even he knew that in shallow coastal waters, galleys had the edge over a wolf ship like the Thrice Lucky. Without the need for wind or currents, they could rely on the strength of a few score well-trained oarsmen to outmaneuver larger ships.
"Raise anchor," shouted the captain. "Ready the ballistae. We make for the open seas and hope we can catch a strong wind."
The crew rushed to their positions, some elves shimmying up the mast guide ropes to unfurl the sails, others heading down below to man the artillery.
"This will be a damn near thing either way," muttered Zenthi, scanning the horizon. "The tribes that raid the seas out here, they know their seamanship well. We are a wounded giant, ripe for the kill.
We can't outrun them? Asked Callis. Was I mishearing all those times you boasted about the speed of this boat?
You heard me well enough, Arika Zenthi snapped. She can outrun anyone on the seas with a decent head of wind. But it's as still as death out here. Even if we could set full sail, these channels are too tight. We'd strike a reef or a cluster of rocks, and we'd be stuck floundering while they swarmed all over us.
The thrice lucky groaned as they swept around a forked spear of lichen-covered rock and entered a narrow pass between two jaws of jagged stone. Tol saw the truth of Zenthi's words. Their hull might be strong enough to fend off a gyre shark's strikes, but one wrong turn, and they would find themselves aground, trapped on those outcroppings. Even at the speed they were cutting through the clear waters, Tol's heart leapt into his mouth when he glanced over the side. The water was shallow here, startlingly so. It seemed impossible that the keel wasn't already being scraped to splinters across the seabed. They had only just cleared the channel when the shout went up from the rear of the thrice lucky.
Sails!
Tol turned and sighted the oncoming ships through his eyeglass. They were sleek, narrow vessels, cutting like daggers through the water. Upon the prow of each was fashioned a demonic visage, roughly but imposingly carved, leering hungrily at their prey. Horned, fanged faces, splattered with blood-red dye. Some had yellowed skulls stuffed into their mouths. He could see figures on the deck, brawny, pale-skinned humans, flesh marked with smears of crimson war paint. The men had long beards, forked and slickened, while the women had short spiked hair, shaved to form a ridge down the center of their skulls. A number wore scraps of armor or helmets, but most went unarmored. 20 or so manned the oars on each galley, while half a dozen strode along the deck or stood upon the forerail, brandishing axes, spears, and boarding hooks. He could see their lips move and knew they were chanting. He glanced above at the galley's triangular sails. They were black, marked with the image of an eight-tentacled sea beast with gaping jaws, each limb grasping a grinning skull.
Heathens, he spat, not mere looters. There will be no bargaining, no taking of prisoners. If they board us, they will slaughter us all.
Heathens, I know how to fight, snarled Callis. Let them come.
These are hardened killers, said Tol. They have raided the Talon coast for centuries, surviving this beast-haunted wilderness against all odds. They will not die easily.
I'd like to see them survive a bullet in the skull, Callis replied.
Tol's right, said Chev, frowning at the oncoming Reaver ships. I've encountered their kind before, and I've no wish to repeat the experience. If we've any luck left, we'll reach the open sea and outrun them. If not...
She left the thought unspoken. The swirling clouds overhead began to spit a torrent of lashing rain. Ahead, Tol could glimpse the glowing line of the horizon, appearing through gaps in the web of rocky spears. They were close to the open sea. The wind was picking up, but hardly filling the sails. They hung, flapping lazily in the breeze. With every second, their pursuers came closer, spreading out as they advanced like wolves on the hunt, looking to surround their quarry. The rear arbalests, a pair mounted on the aft rail, began to load shafts, harpoons tipped with a strange shape, like a blunt-nosed arrowhead.
It's too far, frowned Callis. They'll never score a hit from here.
Just watch, said Tol.
The Corsair gunner sighted and loosed one of the missiles. It arced up and out over the water. It was obvious from the second it was launched that there was no way it would strike one of the vessels. Instead, it struck the water, perhaps 40 paces short of the leftmost Reaver ship. No sooner had it struck the water than it exploded in a sheet of purplish flame that spread across the surface like spilled wine on parchment. Yet it did not burn out, nor did the lapping waves or pouring rain extinguish it. An entire section of the channel was now aflame, tongues of searing fire forking up in search of something to devour, hissing and spitting in the downpour. As they watched, one of the ships, unable to maneuver clear in the cramped confines, barreled through the patch of burning sea. The boat went up like a pitch-soaked torch. A hulking figure on the prow staggered to and fro, engulfed in fire. They could hear his ragged shrieks over the wind. More blazing figures leapt into the water, trying to escape the rising inferno, which now spread out on all sides of the doomed vessel. There was no relief from the hungering fires. The reavers splashed and burned and screamed, and thick black smoke rose into the air above the remaining ships. The elf corsairs laughed and slapped each other on the back.
"Rotten way to go," muttered Callis. "Save your pity," said Toll, "and pray that more burn before they reach us."
The rear arbalests opened up again, and yet more eruptions of flame spread out across the channel. More ships were lit ablaze, and the smell of burning flesh met their nostrils. The thrice lucky yawed to the right, cutting clear of the channel. There was open ocean ahead. The rain came pouring so hard that it hurt, thick bullets of freezing sleet that hammered the deck with a staccato rhythm. Finally, there was a wind. The sails opened and filled, and immediately they could feel the rush of speed. Too little, too late, Toll was sure. The elves' purple fire had accounted for perhaps 4 or 5 of the 20 vessels in pursuit, but the arbalests were out of the incendiary rounds. The reavers were close now. Toll could hear their guttural chanting, a bellowed sound in some ancient island tongue that sent a chill down his spine. The demon-headed prows were mere yards behind them, charred black by the elven fire. The lead vessel was lined with flayed skins and blackened skulls, larger than the other reaver ships by some measure. Along its flank were mounted several rotting torsos, impaled to the deck by long spears. A giant of a man stood tall on the prow, holding a heavy broadaxe easily in one hand. His face was mostly covered by a blood-smeared barbuta, topped by 2 curling horns. His muscular body was riven by multiple slashes, deep cuts that seeped bright red gore. The man seemed to pay his wounds no mind. The witch hunter raised his weapon and sighted the man, but thought better of the shot.
"Let them come a little closer," he thought. "Let me make every shot a killing shot."
One of the rear arbalests loosed a missile, which sailed past the huge warrior and scythed through a row of oar-bearers, pinning several to the deck. The elves were loosing their repeater bows now, sending a hail of bolts whickering into the reavers. In return, the barbarians hurled javelins and throwing axes. The range was extreme, but even so, the well-aimed missiles struck the deck of the thrice lucky. An elf caught a thrown axe in the foot and fell to the deck, shrieking and clutching at the severed stumps of his toes. Larger warriors came forward, hurling grapples. Some fell away into the surging waters, but others stuck fast, carving gouges out of the hull as their barbed hooks dug deep into the wood. More slammed home on the far side of the thrice lucky. Toll sprinted forward. Drawing his blade, he hacked at the rope that dangled from the nearest boarding claw. His rapier was a fencing blade, ill-suited to such crude work, but it was Marciana steel, forged by the undisputed master bladesmith of Excelsis. It made short work of the thick hemp, which sprang away into the water. The crew of the Thrice Lucky was hacking as many grapples away as they could, but more reaver ships were pulling alongside, and with every passing moment more missiles clawed into the hull. Toll saw one grapple strike an elf, digging into his neck and releasing a spurt of crimson. The sailor was yanked off his feet, striking a dizzying blow against the guardrail before spinning off into the waves.
"Prepare for boarders!" yelled Oscus.
The first head emerged over the lip of the port rail, a bald, snarling face, eyes wide and bloodshot, deep in the battle frenzy. Oscus stepped forwards and rammed a dagger deep into the warrior's eye socket. The man's corpse tumbled away. 2 ships were racing parallel to the thrice lucky, latched tight by multiple grapples. Warriors were hauling themselves up the ropes, leaping and grasping hold of the portholes on the gunnery deck below, before dragging themselves over the side and onto the deck. One unfortunate boarder grasped a handhold just as an arbalest loosed its lethal missile. It impaled the warrior through the guts, hurling him 20 paces to crash against the rough hull of his own vessel and splash away into the depths. Yet as many reavers as they butchered, more climbed up towards them, axes strapped to their backs or clamped between yellowed fangs, filed to needle points.
"Steady yourselves!" roared Zenthi.
And as Toll glanced to the wheel, he saw her yank it sharply to the left. The port side of the Thrice Lucky struck the nearest reaver ship, and the bulkier vessel crumpled the oars of the war galley like kindling, smearing several boarders into bloody paste as they were ground between the two ships. The enemy vessel spun, hopelessly unbalanced, with one row of oars gone, and was leaning lengthwise when a pursuing vessel rammed it amidships. The stricken galley came apart in an explosion of wood splinters, upending its crew into the waters. The ship that had struck it fared little better, breaching the water as it smashed into its ally, before turning over in the crashing surf, its prow crumpled. The stunt had bought them some time, but the impact had slowed the Thrice Lucky badly, and more ships were drawing alongside, readying grapples of their own. Toll heard commotion behind, and spun to see half a dozen burly berserkers crash to the deck, wielding vicious axes and serrated blades. They swept their weapons around in wide, careless arcs, cleaving elves in two, or hacking off heads with every swing. Toll watched Kallis step up and blast one of the boarders in the chest with his pistol, unleashing a gout of white smoke. The man staggered a few steps, but came on at the former Free Guild soldier. Kallis fired again, emptying a second barrel, and the man's skull came apart in a wet eruption of blood and brains. The deck was a chaotic melee, a cramped and brutal brawl in which the heavy-bladed humans had the advantage. Toll knew their attackers lacked the skill and precision that marked the corsair's deft swordplay, but it seemed to take a dozen lethal wounds to drop any of them. And all the while, they swept those vicious axes around in great scything arcs. He stepped in behind one and locked an arm around the man's throat, pressed his own four-barreled pistol into the small of his opponent's back, and fired, emptying every chamber at once. The man's chest simply exploded, showering the deck with intestines and fragments of bone. In response, elves began to fight in packs, bearing the reavers down in numbers and stabbing them over and over and over again until they ceased to move. The deck was slick with gore. It was all Toll could do to keep his feet as it swayed and rolled beneath him. A warrior charged at him, near 7 feet of corded muscles and shark hide leather, swinging a wide-bladed cleaver. Toll staggered backwards, not even bothering to deflect the man's blows, instead ducking and swaying aside. The man overextended, slipped just slightly, and Toll thrust out with the tip of his blade, scoring a hit across the man's ribs. It barely seemed to slow the reaver. He snarled, drooling bloody spittle, bellowing nonsensical animal sounds. A backhand swing just missed Toll's leg, and then the man barreled forward, shaggy head down, aiming at the witch hunter's chest like a charging bull. Toll let the reaver's momentum carry him onto the point of his rapier, which slid through flesh with sickening ease, sliding deep into the man's clavicle. It should have been a kill. Instead, the man kept rushing forwards and struck Toll in the chest. They sprawled across the deck. Something hit Toll in the face, hard. A fist or a boot, he wasn't sure. The reaver had lost his weapon, but he straddled Toll's chest, hands locking around the witch hunter's throat. The man's veins stood out like thick ropes. His eyes rolled predatorily back into his head as the blood frenzy overcame him. Toll choked, trying to wrench himself free. Having lost his pistol in the fall, he rammed the pommel of his blade into the reaver's temple over and over until his hands were slick with blood. Unable to quite angle his blade for a killing blow, his vision began to cloud over as he gasped for breath.
"Agrak Tor," barked his assailant. "Masga ranventra, tuva corn, tuva corn."
The man's back arched, and his vice-like grip loosened. He spat blood, which dribbled into his matted beard. Then his head lolled, and he slumped over, dead. Toll dragged in a painful lungful of air, gasping and coughing. He shoved the corpse away. There were 3 black-shafted bolts riddling the man's spine. He looked up and saw Chev stationed up in the mainmast, wielding a repeater bow. She gave him the briefest nod and raised the weapon to her chin, loosing another volley. Another reaver went down, a bolt protruding from his eye. Chapter 18. The woman drove Callis back, tirelessly swinging her glaive, never giving him a moment to strike back. Her face was a twisted mask of hatred, her yellow teeth filed to killing points. A strip of orange hair ran down the center of her narrow skull, spattered with blood. He gave ground, stumbling over moaning bodies and sliding in pools of blood, trying to work some space between them. The woman spat blood in his eyes, and he cursed and slipped to one knee. He raised his sword, intercepting her descending glaive, but she rushed in behind the strike and drove her knee up under his jaw, snapping his head back. He sprawled against something hard and unyielding that blasted the air from his lungs. The reaver raised her glaive high. Aretha Zenthi leapt from the forecastle above, soaring above the swirling melee, twin swords whirling. As she fell, she twisted in midair like a carnival performer, bringing the arcing blades down in a cross cut that carved a bloody cross into the scar-faced woman's back. The reaver toppled with a rattling moan. Zenthi rolled as she landed, coming into a spinning kick that sent another reaver stumbling away. Axes and cleavers swept out at her, but she flowed like quicksilver, ever out of their reach. Another reaver went down, clutching an opened stomach. Another grabbed at the crimson ruin where his eyes had been only moments before, grunting in agony. A fork-bearded reaver raced towards the captain, arms outstretched to grasp her in a crushing embrace. She turned and whipped her blades back and forth. Fingers rained to the deck, and the man stumbled to his knees. She reversed her grip on one sword and brought it down, sinking into the reaver's neck. He gurgled and rolled over. The elves of the thrice lucky cheered their captain wildly.
"Enough!" roared Zenthi, flicking blood from her blades. "Get back on those arbalests, fools!"
Callis reloaded his pistol, searching for targets. They had cleared the deck for now, but more grappling hooks were flying in. Zenthi raced past, bounding back up the steps of the forecastle to the wheel. He followed her. The rain was so thick they could barely see more than a few hundred paces ahead. The skies rumbled, and a flash of lightning revealed more reaver ships closing in on all sides.
"They have us," growled Zenthi. "They'll wear us down, bleed us until we're dry, and feed on our carcass." "Captain!" came a shout from the crow's nest, up on the main mast.
There were several elves up there, the finest shots in the crew, wielding repeaters.
"Storm off the starboard bow, a league and a half away."
Zenthi raced to the rail and peered off into the distance. Callis approached. At first he could see nothing but driving sleet, heavy black clouds overhead, and the knife-like shapes of the reaver ships cutting alongside them. The sea was a rain-shrouded valley of churning grey, against which the thrice lucky seemed laughably, pitifully small, little more than a child's toy. The waves were growing fiercer with every passing moment. Then he saw it. Far off, a cluster of spiraling black tempests reaching down from the darkening clouds, each large enough to swallow the thrice lucky whole. Spirals of lightning flickered and sparked around the whirling vortexes.
"There," said Zenthi. "That's a ship killer if ever I saw one."
Oscars was at the wheel, bleeding from a dozen wounds, teeth gritted in pain.
"I can take us around it," he growled.
"No," said Zenthi. "We're going straight in, right down the throat of the storm."
She took the wheel from the first mate, dragging it to starboard, angling them towards the looming maelstrom.
"Let them follow us if they dare. If we die, they die with us."
"You're out of your damned mind," whispered Callis.
Zenthi's laughter was harsh and bitter.
"It's taken you this long to notice?"
Chev could see far from her perch, and she did not like the look of the waters ahead one bit. They were sailing to their deaths.
"My gods,"
whispered Ecclesius, and she shared his awe. A spear of lightning arced down from the heavens, illuminating perhaps a dozen whirling tempests that whipped the seas to a frothing maw of white foam. Enormous funnels of water formed, dragged up from the ocean by the unthinkable power of the storm. At the base of each, the water was churned into a swirling vortex. She could see dark shapes flittering in and out of the raging waterspouts, beasts of the sea torn from their lairs, helpless in the face of this unnatural calamity. For a moment she thought she saw a bestial face form in the clouds above, a body of striated clouds, eyes of crackling lightning. Then the thrice lucky dipped to crest the bow of a wave, and she had to lean out to grab hold of the rigging, her stomach lurching at the sudden change of momentum.
I had forgotten. So long have I slept. There is truly no limit to the wonders of the eight realms. Have you ever seen a more majestic example of the ferocity of nature?
We're going to die here, she muttered.
Perhaps. But if that is so, you have to admit it's a spectacular last image to take with us to the realm of endings. Who knows? I may simply sink like a stone to the bottom of the ocean, where no mortal being has ever strayed before. What beings slumber down there, I wonder? What ancient gods dwell at the foot of the abyss?
There are some mysteries I have no interest in solving. Below, the deck was littered with corpses, both Reaver and Elf. More of the demon-headed ships were slicing through the waves towards them, sensing the kill. If they were aware of the nightmare they were about to enter, they showed no sign of it. Their angular prows carved through the waves with ease, a sure sign that while the raiders might appear like little more than savage killers, they knew their seamanship well. The thrice lucky scourge of the seas was being outmaneuvered by another predator. The Reaver longships sailed high in the water, and their rows of oars afforded them formidable agility and speed, even in the midst of the thrashing waves.
They are too swift, said Ecclesius. We'll not outrun them in these waters.
Staring out at the hunting ships, Chev didn't doubt the man's words. If the storm didn't consume them, the killers in those vessels soon would. Chapter 19. Toll could see the scale of the calamity they were headed towards, and his jaw locked firm as he understood the inevitability of their fate. It was one thing to face impossible odds with your feet planted and a blade in your hand, but it was quite another to plummet into the heart of a disaster, your life and your mission entirely in the hands of another. It was an unpleasant sensation, and one that Toll had not experienced in some time. Xenthi was perhaps the finest shipmaster in these seas, but surely this task was beyond even her skills.
"Can you get us through that?"
he shouted, staring at the mountain-sized column of water that was rapidly approaching and the gaping hole in the ocean beneath. Xenthi gritted her teeth as she hauled the thrice lucky around in a tight turn, taking them over the crest of a wave and angling them out past the monstrous tempest.
"That is a foolish, damned question. Just keep those blood-hungry dogs off my deck and leave the sailing to me."
It was impossible, Toll knew. No one could sail through that maze of death in one piece. They were already doomed, and it was too late to choose another path now. The thought that he would perish without passing justice upon the traitor Vermeer was too sickening to bear. How many lives would be lost because of his failure, he wondered. How many cities would burn? And worst of all, Toll's greatest error, his failure to recognize the evil brewing within his old friend, would never be redeemed. Callis approached, black hair slicked to his skull, his cheek marked by a nasty cut that ran from his brow to the edge of his jaw. He had stowed his pistol. Guns were temperamental at best in such torrential downpours, even mastercrafted Duardin firing pieces.
"They're still coming," he shouted over the crashing of the waves. "They're following us, right on into that insanity." "Trust Arika," said Toll.
his fingers closed tight around the hilt of his sword. The freezing rain was chafing his hand raw.
She will take us through.
He didn't believe it, of course, but what else could they do? Zolek stared at the wrath of the Blood Kraken, the storm that his vengeful god had loosed upon them. Ever was the Dweller in the Deeps a mercurial master, bestowing great gifts and terrible punishments on his faithful, often in the span of only a few moments. He had thought that his blood offering in the circle had been enough to gain the warlike deity's favor, but that had been a foolish hope. Such meager death could never appease the great hungerer. It required a far greater tribute. Their failure to stop the elven wave-cutter had been their doom. Now they would die along with their intended prey, dragged down by the storm into the depths of the many-limbed god's lightless realm. So be it.
We are bound for the bottomless deep, our souls claimed by the Blood Kraken,
he roared, turning to the ranks of oarsmen, still drawing them through the waves with fearsome speed.
But before we die, let us claim one more tribute for his lightless halls.
They shouted their assent as one and redoubled their efforts. Zolek had never seen the Skulltaker carve its way through the waves with such speed and purpose. Around him, angling in on the fleeing corsair vessel, were a dozen remaining war galleys. The foe's steersmen knew their trade well. By all rights, they should have overrun the ship and taken the deck already. Each time they drew close, the elf wave-cutter arced away, riding the waves with astonishing grace for its size. If this was to be their last hunt, then it would be a worthy kill indeed. Armand Kallis had never lived through anything like it. As a child growing up in Excelsis, he had watched the storms rage off the coast, out beyond the seawall, around the forest of swaying masts that was the city docks. He had watched the skies alive with light and noise, and stared open-mouthed at the spectacle. His mother had threatened him with all manner of punishments one night, when he had loosed the latch on his window and climbed upon the roof of their house to watch one such tempest, the fiercest he had ever seen. He remembered the smell of lightning on the wind, the arcing crescents that reached out like fingers of fire across the bay. He remembered vividly the dreams that had followed that night. In them he was lost out amidst that raging elemental chaos, adrift and terrified, helpless against the unimaginable power of nature. That potent terror came rushing back now, though this time it would not vanish with the dawn. The thrice lucky tossed, yawed, and spun, seemingly out of control, its masts and sails protesting with creaking roars as the winds whipped them to and fro. It was almost impossible to keep one's footing, like trying to balance upright on a galloping steed. The elves moved with impossible grace across the deck, while he staggered, then fell. The wind and rain were torrential, so thick and violent that he could barely see 10 paces in front of himself. He teetered as the bow of the ship rose high into the air and struck against the ship's rail. He gasped in terror as the churning ocean rose to slam into his face, toppled backwards and sprawled on the deck. He felt hands around his shoulders, helping him upright. He turned and stared into the face of Chev Arklis. She was yelling something, but he could not make it out in the thunderous noise of the storm. She leaned in and bellowed in his ear.
We have to get below!
Arms wrapped around each other's shoulders, they stumbled across the deck, skidding on the sheets of water that gushed across the surface. Bodies slid and rolled, splashed overboard or struck the rail with bone-crunching force. Kallis looked around for Toll, but the witch hunter was nowhere to be seen. There was the hatch to the lower decks, shut tight and barred with heavy pull-locks. Kallis knelt, yanked at the metal latch, and tugged one free. There was a burst of lightning, and an almighty crack, the sound of 100 cannons discharged at once. Splinters rained down, and a shadow loomed over them. Kallis blinked through the rain, and saw the rear mast toppling towards him, trailing smoke and flame. Chev battered into him from the side, and they rolled clear. The heavy timber slammed onto the deck, crushing an unfortunate crewman beneath it. It had fallen on the deck hatch, barring access below. Ropes whipped across the deck, and one hooked Callis by the ankle. He was dragged on his front across the splintered wood, yelling and flailing, entirely helpless. He caught hold of something, the leg of an arbalest, smashed apart by falling beams. Splinters of wood dug into his fingers, but he dared not let go of his lifeline. He kicked frantically at the loop of thick rope around his boot. It was attached to a flap of sail, which was fluttering and whipping back and forth over the edge of the ship. Slowly, inexorably, he was being dragged into the ocean. His foot was agony, twisted badly in the fall. He had no idea where his blade was. He scrabbled at his belt and grabbed a thin-bladed dirk, tried to hack his foot free. The ship yawed again, and his bloody fingers slipped and lost purchase on the arbalest. He skidded across the hardwood, smashed his head against something hard, then tumbled into empty air. Chapter 20. Toll stood hunched by Arika Zenthi's side, grasping hold of the forecastle and staring at a sight he knew he would never forget. They circled the edge of an abyss. The thrice lucky leaned agonizingly, a scant few hundred paces away from tumbling into that gaping void of swirling water a dozen boat lengths across. Captain Zenthi's teeth were gritted, her eyes narrowed, and veins bulged from her thin neck. He could have sworn she was smiling. The vortex of water rose up into the clouds in the center of the maelstrom, a spiraling column large enough to devour a fleet whole, one end vanishing down into the depths. And still the Reaver ships came on. They were close now, gaining ground with the loss of the rear mast. Their own sails were filled with the howling wind, stitched with the same bloody image of the Kraken. As Toll watched them bearing down, one vessel strayed too close to the whirlpool's edge. Rather than tumbling down into nothing, it was dragged into the air by the cyclonic winds that whipped about the vortex. Tiny figures, screaming men and women, were plucked from the deck and sent spinning through the air, sucked into the enormous waterspout. The mast and its sails were torn from the spinning vessel, and then the entire hull came apart in a shower of splinters. The shattered fragments of the ship circled the tempest like a swarm of insects before disappearing into the jet-black clouds above. Something struck the thrice lucky hard on the port side. The ship groaned beneath them, and they drifted closer to the abyss, Zenthi screaming in rage as she hauled the wheel in the opposite direction.
"Get them off our flank!" she yelled, "or they'll drive us over the edge!"
Oscus ran with Toll, making for the far side of the ship, where a group of corsairs were raining down javelins onto a Reaver galley which was angled into the prow of the thrice lucky. The oarsmen were not abandoning their posts to leap aboard their quarry. They were no longer trying to take the thrice lucky alive. They were out for the kill, and they were willing to throw away their lives to ensure their prey's destruction. Toll grabbed Oscus's arm.
"How do we drive them back?" he shouted. "The arbalests are shattered, and there's no route to the lower decks." "Follow," the elf shouted back, and hauled himself over the side of the rail.
Toll cursed and rushed forward. Oscus was clambering down the hull, agile as a spider, missiles slamming into the wood around him. With one hand, he reached down and prized open one of the gunnery deck portholes, and with serpent-like grace, he slipped his body through the gap, disappearing into the hull. Toll sheathed his blade and lowered himself over the edge of the rail, following the first mate. Below, he could see the oars of the Reaver galley and the storm-lashed ranks of barbarian raiders, still bellowing their battle hymns as they drove their vessel against the thrice lucky with suicidal determination. One of the figures gestured up at him, and axes and spears began to clatter and bounce off the hull around him. He lacked Oscus's dexterous grace, and it was all he could do to stop himself from falling. Whether he hit the ocean or struck the deck of the Reaver ship, That would be the end of him. He strained for the open porthole with one hand, gritting his teeth and clinging to a tear in the hull with the other. It was too far. A flash of silver rushed past his eye as another missile clattered from the wood, mere inches from his face. Sooner or later, a lucky throw would strike him. He let himself fall, scrabbling across the slick wood, desperately reaching for the lip of the porthole. He grasped it, and his feet skidded across the wood as he hung there. Strong hands grabbed him and hauled him through the porthole, and he splashed into ankle-high water. He spat out a mouthful of the rancid liquid and looked around. The gunnery deck was a charnel pit, littered with dead elves and the bodies of human raiders who had tried to enter the same way as Oscus and Toll had just done. Only a couple of the arbalests were still in shooting position. The others had been torn from their moorings and now lay in a shattered heap at the far end of the chamber.
"Come on!"
snarled Oscus, gesturing him further into the depths of the ship. They ran as fast as they could, splashing through filthy brown water and scattered debris. Even Toll, no man of the seas, could tell that the Thrice Lucky was dying. She was a tough ship, no doubt, but she was taking on water now from 100 different wounds.
"How long do we have?" he said.
Oscars turned and fixed him with a sad look. It was the first time he had seen any emotion from the taciturn first mate.
"She could go at any moment,"
the elf said, running one hand along a great crack in the hull.
"She is made from strong, solid oak, but even she cannot take this punishment. Even if the maelstrom does not take us, it will be a miracle if we make port." "Then let's make sure we take as many of those savages with us as we can,"
Toll snarled. Oscus nodded and ducked through into a low chamber behind the stairs to the lower deck. This was the armory. It was dank and lightless, for no flames could be risked so close to their black powder supplies. After a moment, his eyes adjusted to the light, and he saw rows of dully gleaming repeater bows, swords, and boarding axes set around the walls of the chamber. At the rear were piled crates, and Oscus was levering one such container open. Toll grabbed a sword from the rack and used its blade to help pry the lid. It snapped open and dropped to splash in the water pooling around their boots.
"Careful with these," hissed the first mate,
gently removing a large glass container filled with an opaque liquid. Toll frowned, unsure of exactly what he was dealing with.
"You spill one in here, and we are dead in moments." "What am I holding?" asked Toll. "One of the captain's rarer finds," said Oscus. "One that cost many lives to obtain. We will only need the one. Trust me on this."
Something within the jar snapped against the glass with surprising force, and Toll almost dropped the entire case. He peered closer, but could see nothing through the milky liquid. With both of them steadying the jar, Oscus led the way back to the secondary deck.
"Help me with this," he said,
hefting the heavy container up and leaning it against the edge of the porthole.
"When it breaks, it must not be in contact with the Thrice Lucky. We must make sure it lands right on their deck. Ready?"
Toll nodded. On the first mate's mark, he thrust the container out into the empty air and watched it sail through the rain and crash onto the deck of the Reaver vessel amongst the crew. At first, nothing seemed to happen.
"Wait,"
said Oscus, watching the ship intently, a sinister smile on his sharp features. Something began to swell amidst the rain-splashed deck of the enemy ship. At first it was formless, bulging like an amniotic sac. With every passing moment it grew, forming pseudopods of transparent matter, which whipped and searched about like questing tendrils. One wrapped around the flesh of an oarsman, and the man arched his back and screamed, steam rising from a burning lash where the strange creature had touched him. Another pseudopod wrapped around his throat, and the man's cries became little more than a choking gurgle. Even through the lashing rain, Toll could smell the scent of burning flesh. The formless shape grew larger and larger, and more reavers began to thrash as the searing tentacles lashed and grabbed at them, burning through hide wraps and metal armor with shocking ease, sending up wisps of smoke whenever they met exposed flesh. The Reavers had abandoned their oars now and were hacking at the amorphous blob with axes and blades. But to their horror, even their weapons smoked and crumbled as they contacted the bizarre creature. The war galley lagged and scraped against the side of the Thrice Lucky, its momentum lost as more and more Reavers scrambled to take up weapons against the thing growing from the deck of their ship. As Toll watched, he could see the thing begin to smoke and burn at the very deck beneath it, the wood crumbling away under its jellied bulk. Something resembling a head was forming amidst the mass, with malformed primitive eyes like pale yolks. The thing was large now, filling the entire center of the ship and growing with every second. He could see bodies writhing within its translucent form, dissolving and burning even as they struggled to break free. With a chorus of screams, the ship broke free of the Thrice Lucky, disappearing into the gloom. The last thing Toll saw was several translucent limbs reaching around to envelop the dying ship, contracting with enough strength to tear the timbers of the galley apart.
"What in Sigmar's name was that thing?" he said,
shocked at the swiftness and horror of the Reaver ship's demise.
"The spawn of something that lives deep, deep below, in lightless realms that no mortal can ever reach," said Oscus,
still wearing that vicious grin as he savored the screams that rippled across the water.
"Something for which there is no name."
Chapter 21
"Armand!"
yelled Chev, as she watched the man get swept overboard, dragged by the rope that had entangled him. She raced across the deck and peered out over the rail. There was a terrifyingly small amount of ocean between them and the edge of the maelstrom, and between that and the Thrice Lucky was the largest of the Reaver ships, close enough to touch the hull. Warriors were hurling more grappling claws, and she ducked aside as one slammed into the deck at her feet. Callus lay sprawled on the prow deck of the demon-headed ship, half-dazed, while a giant of a man advanced on him, wielding an axe as tall as Chev herself. Desperately, she looked around for something to use, something to distract the hulking killer. She had no weapon, nothing.
"He is a dead man," said Ecclesius sadly. "You cannot save him. Do not watch this, Miss Arklis."
Callus snorted with helpless laughter, shaking his head. Against all the odds, he had somehow managed to survive being thrown over the side of the Thrice Lucky, only to find himself crashing to the deck of the very killers hunting them across the seas. He had to see the funny side, even in situations like this, with his impending death at hand. A scarred brute of a man advanced on him, carrying a vicious broadaxe as if it weighed less than a blade of grass. Callus reached to his belt and drew his dirk. Melt about 17 similarly sized weapons down and reforged them, and you'd have almost enough metal to make the hilt of his opponent's axe. He was too tired and bruised to let the fear overcome him. Better this way. Better to die under the strike of a long axe than plunge into the seas and be dragged down into the inky blackness.
"What are you waiting for?"
he laughed, flipping the blade into a backhand grip, as he had learned to fight on the streets of Excelsis.
"I've killed half a dozen of your gutless kin today. It's about time one of you gave me a proper fight."
His opponent's mouth twitched just slightly, perhaps revealing a flicker of amusement. Callus barely even saw the strike coming. Like a striking spider, the savage snapped forwards, bringing his axe down to carve Callus's neck to waist. It was only a fortuitous roll of the waves that sent him stumbling back out of the big man's reach, splashing in a great puddle of bloody water that had gathered in the prow of the Reaver ship. Callus rolled, and the axe crunched into the deck, sending water splashing into the air. He kicked out and connected with the brute's jaw, but the man didn't even seem to register the blow. He grabbed Callus by the front of his shirt and lifted him into the air. His face was older than Callis had expected, lined and weathered, with a covering of grey-white stubble. The man slammed a fist into his side. Dizzy and sputtering for air, he stabbed out with his dagger. The blade pierced the man's hide wraps, and he felt it scrape across bone. The savage growled, hurled him against the totem at the front of the ship. He slammed into the unyielding surface and slid to the floor, losing his grip on the dagger. The man stalked purposefully after him, hefting his axe. The longboat heaved to the side, and Callis gazed up blearily to see the towering whirlwind of the waterspout, no more than 500 paces from the ship. This close, the sound was apocalyptic, a rushing roar of wind and hammering rain. The timbers beneath him groaned and creaked, and he felt the back half of the ship sway to port, drawn inexorably towards the approaching catastrophe. The Reaver Lord stepped close and smashed a fist into his face. His vision went black for a moment, and when he came to, he was being lifted into the air, and he was staring into the man's bloodshot eyes. His breath smelled like smoke and dried blood.
"Weak,"
he growled, and his vice-like grip tightened around Callus's throat. The boat swayed again, and the Reaver stumbled, his foot slipping just slightly on the rain-swept deck. His grip slackened just a fraction, and Callis made a spear of the two forefingers of his right hand and thrust them into his assailant's eye. The man grunted in pain, and Callis followed with a knee to the groin. Not a technique they taught you in the Free Guild drill schools, that one. More fool them. The big man's grasp weakened just slightly, and Callis twisted and wriggled free. He crashed to the deck, rolled and snatched up his knife. As he turned, he just barely ducked aside from a swipe of the Reaver's axe. His opponent's eye was pouring blood, and the man's posture had changed. Gone was the slow, assured menace, replaced by a killing fury. Callis rose, exhausted. He clutched his pitiful blade in shivering fingers. The meager weapon was not going to be nearly enough. The Reaver was too big, too strong. Sooner or later, no matter how much he skirted around, that axe was going to crash into him, tear him in two. He glanced around desperately for something he could use, some way to escape the drifting vessel, but saw nothing. To his horror, the thrice lucky was slowly pulling away from the longship, away from the raging waterspout that threatened to grasp him up in its raging mouth. The man stalked closer, raising his axe. A strobing flash of lightning illuminated the drops of blood that slid along its surface, and the raging fires in the Reaver's eyes. Something sailed in over the water, arching gracefully over the waves, and struck the advancing warrior in the side with both feet. It was Chev Arklis, a thick rope secured around her waist. As her momentum was suddenly reversed, she swung back out over the water. The savage barely even staggered under the blow, but it stopped him in his tracks. He stared up at the dangling elf, and as she began to swing back towards him once more, he swept his axe back, ready to strike her in two. Callis surged to his feet, leaping up and wrapping his arms and legs around the barbarian's sturdy frame, locking his hands tight around his foe's throat so that the man could not bring his axe to bear. Chev crashed in again, and all three went down in a tangle of limbs. Callis clung on like a griffhound with its beak locked around an intruder's leg, knowing that if he released his grip, they were both dead. The big man slammed elbows into his side and bucked and rocked with furious strength, but still he would not let go, even through the haze of pain. Chev darted in with a blade, seeking to sink it between the struggling warrior's ribs. A kick sent her flying backwards, almost disappearing over the gunwale. From the rear of the ship, a burly figure dressed in rain-swept rags rushed forward, attempting to tackle her, but she slipped out from under his searching hands with easy grace, planting a boot in his back and sending him tumbling into the waves. She bellowed something at him that was lost in the storm, face pale with terror as she stared up at the approaching whirlwind. Forking tendrils of lightning were reflected in her eyes. Beneath Callis, the towering warrior finally found his feet and began to rise. With an animal howl, he bent his body forwards, bucking and sending Callus somersaulting into the air. He lost his grip around the man's throat and landed in a shuffling roll, staggering towards Chev, who was entranced by the catastrophe about to swallow them. The silk steel rope was fastened tight around her waist, and he prayed that it would hold. He grasped the rope and wound it around his wrist and turned to see the warrior leaping towards them, murder in his eyes. Callus stepped up onto the gunwale, dragging Chev along with him, and let himself fall backwards into the sea. The waves rose up to claim them with a stinging slap, and he could not help but gasp, and therefore swallow a mouthful of bitter, ice-cold seawater that burned his throat. Chev was clutching his arm so hard it hurt, her fingers digging into his flesh like claws, but he welcomed the pain. It was the only thing he could focus on in the swirling, pummeling madness that enveloped him. An undercurrent caught them, lifted them high, and for a moment his head broke the surface of the water. His arm was almost yanked out of its socket by the force of the tightening rope, but still he held on. He saw the horn-helmed warrior standing upon the prow of his ship, eyes fixed upon his own. The man's colossal, muscled form was shaking, and Callus realized that his foe was laughing. He thought he could even hear the booming sound for a moment above the churning waves. Like the great head of a sea serpent, the tempest rose behind the laughing man, a monster with a body formed of whirling corpses and whipped up shards of flotsam. As if he weighed no less than a feather, the man was lifted up into the air and sent whirling into the heart of the beast, and Callus saw a bright spray of blood as rushing knives of wood and bone flayed the flesh from his body. Then he was lost in the whirlwind, absorbed by the ravenous monster. Callus felt, almost imperceptibly, a slight tug upon the rope he clutched in bleeding, scraped raw fingers, and then a wave rose up and crashed down upon him, driving him deep beneath the waves into a world of swirling bubbles and inky blackness. His head struck something solid with enough force to snap his jaw shut, splintering teeth. And he knew no more.
"Stronger than he looks, this one," was the first thing Callus heard.
He recognized that voice, harsh and dismissive, but not the faint undercurrent of grudging respect that it carried. Light speared into his skull and lit a thousand painful fires behind his eyes, but he forced them open anyway. Oscus loomed over him, his angular face spattered with blood and marked with several ugly bruises.
"Oh, gods," muttered Callus, as he hauled his aching body upright. "Where is the elf? Where's Chev?"
"Here," came a voice from beside him. The elf lay on the deck of the Thrice Lucky, nursing an ugly scrape on her forehead, but otherwise looking largely unharmed. She flashed him a pained grin. He stood and felt a firm hand take him by the shoulder and steady his feet. It was Toll, and though the man's face was lined and his eyes baggy with tiredness, Callus felt he saw a flicker of concern cross those pale grey eyes.
"We dragged you out of the water," said Toll. "Thought you were dead at first, both of you."
"The Reavers?" Callus asked.
"Dead," said Arika Zenthi. She was leaning on the fore gunwale, staring out across the oceans. "All of them. The storm took them." For the first time, Callus noticed how quiet it was. Warm light filtered down from above, bathing the deck of the Thrice Lucky in soft amber. There was a light, refreshing breeze that felt like cooling water on his skin. It seemed like they had entered another world entirely in the time he had lain unconscious. He could not reconcile this sunny, calm place with the raging violence of the tempest that had so nearly devoured them. Toll released Callus's shoulder, allowing him to find his own feet. The deck beneath him was stained a dark brown. Against the forecastle, he could see a pile of torn bodies. From a glance, it looked to be at least 30 or so, more than a quarter of the ship's crew. He glanced up and saw the splintered lance of the mainmast.
It had been shorn free, along with the mizzen and a great chunk of the bowsprit. Jagged lumps of torn wood and coils of sea-soaked sails were piled across the deck. A kneeling workband was pulling one of the fallen sails taut against the hull on the starboard side, nailing the fabric into the deck with heavy wooden stakes. Callis was no expert on sailing ships, but even he could see that the thrice-lucky was limping like a wounded auroch. If another demon-headed longship appeared on the horizon, they would have not a hope of outrunning it.
"We're half a day out from Bilgeport," said Oscus. "We'll make it, if the weather holds."
Callis walked over to Chev. With a wince, he knelt down beside her.
"Thank you," he said simply.
He'd have liked to be more eloquent in his gratitude, but right now the words just wouldn't reach his lips. She smiled and shrugged.
"Forget it," she said. "At least until I get myself into trouble, then return the favor."
Chapter 22. The first they saw of Bilgeport was the curving arc of a shell, reaching over the horizon like a crashing wave frozen in time. Beneath that enormous mass lay a mountain of bone, painted green-grey with weed and algae. As they drew closer, Callis could see five immense ribs, carved open and filled with ballistae and cannon, organic watchtowers facing out over a great harbour of swaying sails. The head of the dead beast lay perpendicular to the rocky shore. It had been hollowed out and carved to form a bizarre dock sheltered by the strange crested skull. Two rows of razor-sharp teeth, each stained by age and the size of a ship's mast, formed a formidable defensive wall around a series of jetties, upon which they could see the hustle and bustle of movement, ships unloading and stowing their sails, and bare-chested figures of all descriptions hauling crates and barrels up a gentle slope and into the darkness of the main body.
"There she is," said Zenthi. "The Reaver port. You get used to the smell, eventually."
"Certainly hope so," said Callis.
It was a unique aroma, fish oil and urine mixed with smoke, tallow and rot. There was also the slightest hint of fragrant spices and perfume trying vainly to mask the stench.
"Take us in," Zenthi said to Oscus, "and handle the docking fees. We're the Black Dragon out of Ceyron. You're Captain Duventhi, and you're here to trade gyre shark skins."
At Callis's questioning glance, she explained,
"We're limping into port half dead. I'd rather not draw any unwanted attention, if possible. I know this place. We're sailing into a den of hungry sharks while seeping blood. Maybe we stay out of sight and mind until we've got ourselves a ride out of here."
"We?" said Tol. "There is no we. We're done, Arika. You can find your own passage. I thought I had made that perfectly clear."
There was a tense silence as the two glowered at each other.
"As you like," said the captain at last, with a cold smile.
They changed sails on the approach to Bilgeport, exchanging the thrice lucky's familiar black and yellow array for dull grey leathers. There was little they could do about masking the ship's sleek, obviously well-crafted hull beyond patching up the gunnery ports. Still, the vessel hardly looked like a fleetmaster's flagship with half its hull shattered, its mainmast lost and blackened fire damage across the deck. They passed ships of all shapes and sizes as they drifted between the great jaws of the harbour. War galleys gilded with silver and gold, bearing great palanquins upon the forecastle from which fat, powdered merchants sprawled, attended to by dozens of scrawny slaves. A Duardin cog hauler chugged past, thick smoke billowing from its three chimneys. Upon the jaws, which had been widened and abutted with stone walkways, sailors, servants, and merchants lay sprawled in the sun. At the eastern edge of the port, a tower rose, crafted from pink stone, with its own secluded harbour amidst the chaos. It reared into the sky, protruding from a wide circular socket of the dead behemoth. A perimeter wall enclosed a harbor in which bobbed a great three-masted vessel, its sails blood-red and white, marked with a winged serpent in flight. Gold-barreled cannon rippled along its length, gleaming in the sunlight. "That's the Blood Drake," said Zenthi. "High Captain Caskin's ship. It said she's the deadliest vessel on the Talon coast. It might be true, as of now."
"This thing," said Kallus, gesturing to the carcass that housed the Reaver city. "What in Sigmar's name was it?"
"They say it was one of the spawn of Nahavalak, the dweller beneath the waves," said Oscus. "Every 500 years the great beast would rise from the depths, destroying cities and civilizations, unleashing its spawn upon the oceans to devour all life. Less a creature than a god of beasts, a deity of ruinous power, created to destroy those who dared attempt to conquer the majesty of nature."
"So, what happened to it?" said Kallus.
"The god-king drove his hammer into the great beast's eye, or so the legend goes," said the first mate, "blinding it and sending it back down into the depths, back to its lair. Its spawn was slaughtered. Most sank along with their progenitor, but this one was beached upon the shore and expired. Carrion beasts and savages picked the flesh from its bones, and finally something even worse happened upon its remains. The High Captains."
"Their kind has lurked here since the founding of Excelsis," said Tol, "picking off the bones of the dead. They range south as far as the coast of Tusks, preying upon merchants, travelers, and whoever else strays into their path."
"Why are they still here?" asked Kallus. "Why have the free guilds not been sent to wipe them out?"
"Because they're clever," said Zenthi. "They steal and kill only when they know they can get away with it, and they leave no witnesses. And they know when not to let their greed get the better of them. The storm casts, the guilds, they've too many foes on all sides as it is. They can't spare the ships or the troops. Anyway, the High Captains make sure the right palms in Excelsis are greased. As long as they're careful, they stay outside of the law."
"For now," said Tol,
eyeing the ships lazily drifting out of the bay. They slid into a berth alongside a barnacled wooden pier, upon which stood a small, yellow-toothed man, surrounded by a gang of burly-looking fellows armed with spiked clubs. The small man was carrying a slate and a quill, and peered at them through his crab-like eyes as they drifted past.
"Name and cargo?"
he yelled in a high-pitched, raspy little voice.
"Black Dragon, out of Saren,"
Oscus shouted back, leaning against the rail and raising a hand to cover his eyes from the sun.
"We are carrying hides and oils for market."
The dockmaster nodded to the gouged holes in the side of the ship.
"Looks like you've taken a pounding," he said.
"Raiders," said Oscus.
As he spoke, several of the crew lowered the gangplank, and the dockmaster hobbled along to meet them, his henchmen following lazily behind.
"Surprised you're alive,"
he said, spitting a mouthful of black slime onto the pier.